Are you feeling stuck in your social work career, wondering if you're even on the right path? You're not alone, and that's why I created the Career Clarity Challenge. In just 5 days, you'll reflect on your values, discover your strengths, create a simple action plan, and learn how to use supervision as a real tool for growth. By the end of this challenge, you'll feel clearer about what matters, more confident in your strengths, and ready to take your next step. Sign up today. It's free, it's practical, and it could be the reset you've been waiting for. Just head to the show notes to join the Career Clarity Challenge now.
Welcome back to the collaboration with Inside Social Work and Becoming an AMHSW, the podcast, with me, Ashton Hayes, and with Marie Vakarkas. So in
Hello,
our,
that's me.
That is you. Sorry. I should have thrown to you. In our last episode, we talked about becoming a social worker and each of our journeys. And today we're going to talk about what we're doing now. So Marie, what is it that you're actually working on now? What does your work look like?
Yeah, so it was very interesting to think about my social work journey. And now it feels almost very distinct of because I became an AMHSW the same time I sort of started a business. Mm-hmm. So it feels like very two separate careers almost. So I run a group private practice called the Therapy Hub in Melbourne, and we offer obviously face-to-face and online therapy. We have a special interest in working with young people, mm-hmm. young adults, and then there's a few family therapists and couples therapists. So that's sort of, if you heard the previous episode around sort of moving into that family work, you'll see, you'll understand why that's an interest of mine and finding other family therapists to come on board. So we do a lot of work with the system as well. And then I have my own, I guess, personal brand, so Marie Vakarkas, and through that I run trainings and workshops. So I go into organizations and do reflective practice groups or group supervision. Mm-hmm. I run workshops like mental health first aid, both youth and adults, and tuning into teens, so parenting program. And then I have my own parenting program called Connected Teens, mm-hmm. which combines a bit of Bowen family therapy, a bit of Bowen family systems therapy with acceptance and commitment therapy. So really looking at supporting parents during that particularly tricky age of child to adolescence. That's where I find the most interesting bit to work in. So yesterday when I was on the last episode, when I was talking about moving into working with adolescents and then parents, that high school age was my sweet spot. Mm-hmm. And that's also where I found parents struggled the most with individuation and autonomy and what it evoked for them. And so that parenting program is part of that. And I'm also working on a resource for therapists with innovative resources that will help have those kinds of conversations with families in the space that can be used DIY, so families can do it on their own, or in therapy with a therapist. So really trying to bring out that relational stuff. So I still have a strong interest in mental health and mental illness. Mm-hmm. And I use a lot of EMDR, especially EMDR intensives. I love those. And the family work is around how people respond to distress, how they connect with each other, all of those things that we know shapes our mental health and influences our mental health. So that's all the stuff that I do. It crosses over between the two brands. And then there's the Inside Social Work podcast, mm-hmm. which is for other therapists. And then through that, I talk about some of the training that I run for therapists. So I have some on-demand, a mixture of on-demand and live, and all the live trainings go to on-demand for therapists or social workers starting out, or even experienced ones who are trying to learn some new things. And then the podcast, This Complex Life, which talks about love, sex, and relationships and all those messy, complex things. So there's a real strong, I have a strong interest in education and teaching people mm-hmm. about what we might know or we might have learned that seems to kind of be hidden behind, I don't know, not a paywall, but I don't know. We just think everyone should know it and we think right. they do and sometimes they don't. So that's sort of my ramble of what I'm working on now.
So in the last episode, you spoke about going into a teaching space in terms of teaching English. So that not only that desire to learn, but that desire to share information seems really strong.
I'd never thought of that before. Yeah, I suppose so.
I just wonder how early into your going into that AMHSW and private practice space, do did you start to feel like I really want to incorporate training and education, that kind of thing?
It started before, right. Actually. So when I was working in schools and I did my mental health first aid instructor training, mm-hmm. I then started running them on weekends. So I would very pre-COVID, pre-lockdown, Zoom and all of that, would literally print out a flyer, and I've got some of the daggiest logos and old flyers that were so, so bad. And I would print out a flyer, stick it around a few places, create an event on Eventbrite, hire the cheapest local hall I could and lug over plastic tables and chairs and a projector and run a training. And so that started first. So I actually had an ABN because I used to do tutoring. Right. So I used to work with, might have been MacKillop Family Services. So I kind of worked with some of their kids in foster care as a tutor. Mm-hmm. Very short period of time. So I needed an ABN to do that. And so I had that there and I just ran events at the local community centre. So that started first was the training. And then I sort of folded that into the therapy hub. And now they've sort of split a little bit because with the changes through COVID, what it did was create a lot of opportunity for those programs to be digitized and yeah. offered more readily available online. So now I can run them all over Australia mm-hmm. and I have and I do. And if you want me to train you, please get in touch. So, yeah, that's always been part of it.
Mm. Yeah, I really love that. And do you see yourself being able to offer training in distinct areas or do you see them overlapping?
So the overlap, this has always been hard to articulate and I struggle with this when I work with business coaches and maybe that's another episode. It is really that overlap of mental health and relationships. So even something like mental health first aid, it's not treating mental illness. It's how do you respond to someone's worsening of a mental illness or a mental health crisis. And so the most valuable, I guess, interesting bit for me in that is how do you approach someone? How do you talk to them? How do you help them feel supported? How do you encourage other support? And so it's around the context of mental health mm-hmm. or ill health, but I'm teaching people the conversational skills to have those tough conversations. And so they are distinct. So I do run some, I guess, training around specific like anxiety or depression and or working creatively with young people and how to adapt and adopt and modify maybe CBT for a younger audience. So I still help clinicians digest material and package it up for a different audience mm-hmm. and treat mental ill health. And my other focus is on the relational side. So working on a lot of things around how do you help multiple people in the room navigate things like bereavement or a change in life circumstance or a divorce, a separation, a chronic illness. So all of those things do overlap and that's at the moment piquing my interest at the moment.
Yeah, I love that. And so you work across a wide range of people. What would you say was the youngest?
Probably 7 or 8, but I don't work with that young anymore. When I first started, I sort of opened up myself to a range of different referrals until I found that sweet spot. And so even though I like working with younger kids and I've got my room has set up with toys and sandpits and all that sort of stuff, over time I found that I enjoyed a lot more the parent work because that's where I felt a lot of change could happen. Mm. And so now I sort of don't go younger than maybe 14.
Right.
Yeah.
I think finding your niche is an evolutionary process, isn't it?
It is. And I've heard different opinions around niching down and, yes, you might call it specializing. Mm. And what I encourage people to do is it does help just target your PD as well. Exactly. So at the moment I'm focusing on couples work. And so I've kind of set myself like a 2-year training program in my head. So that's how long I've got to do my certification. Mm-hmm. I'm reading all the books that the Gottmans have written. I'm absorbing training from other couples therapists. So I'm giving myself a sort of couples therapy 2-year intensive. Mm. And before that I was doing the same with EMDR. So I kind of like to have time patches. Otherwise you don't know what training to do, what webinars to do, what conferences to go to. It feels really overwhelming. So sometimes I like to set a kind of topic or a theme and just focus on that for a little bit. And then know, something else might be curious. I might do like some somatic work, but I might bring in that somatic stuff into couples therapy or anything I understand about trauma. I'll either put that in the EMDR category and how I treat that in the room or the psychoed and information that I bring into the couple. So I try to have a few different things that overlap and complement each other, but I don't like being so, air quotes, holistic without a strong theoretical reason of this is what I'm doing and why.
Yeah.
I want to have a strong why and a strong case conceptualization and then bring in those other things as tools rather than just being like, let's try this and let's try that. And I think that's really confusing for clients as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that when we are able to find what aligns with what lights us up, to use a phrase that's been used a million times, I think that does translate into longevity in the work and it translates into better outcomes for clients for sure.
Yeah, I think that's always been something I've focused on even when I wasn't self-employed. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's not a portfolio. I mean, I've kind of got a portfolio career, I guess, at the moment with all these different things. And even when I was employed somewhere else, I had practice groups that I attended outside of the workspace. I had group supervision that I attended. I had charities that I supported. I looked at all the different things that I needed to feel fulfilled and energized and found ways to put them in. And so there was always a working group or an event to organize or a fundraiser. So when I worked in schools, I got involved a lot with outdoor education because I was one of the few female staff members who was happy to go on a multi-day hike with a whole bunch of teenagers. And so I was happy to do that. And then we, you know, did the Great Vic bike ride. So I kind of got to find ways to do things that were maybe a hobby or an interest and aligned to the work and then have something on like the project on the weekend or students on placement or the podcast. So you don't have to be limited by just what you see in front of you. And there's so many ways to get involved with charities, with organizations, with creative endeavors, with side hustles that feel energizing or, I guess, meet different needs you might have from work. That's how I've been looking at it.
That's a great way to look at it.
Now, how do you look at it? What are you doing now? Where are you? You grilling me for 20 minutes?
Where am I? I think it's interesting when I look back on what I had planned and where I had started. I think I, very early on in my career, I was, as I've mentioned before, I did social work as a mature student. So I'd had lots of experience out in the workforce and at varying levels out in the workforce. And so I think fairly early on, I moved very naturally into mentoring and leadership. And I think for me, what that looked like was being able to see gaps that could be filled in a way that was beneficial for the agency that I was working with, or ways in which I could support staff and bring them up to feel empowered and be able to continue the work without burning out. And so that looked early on in my career, that looked like supervision. So as soon as I could under the SSW, which was 2 years post-qual, I did. And so where I'm working now, I kind of have two spaces. So I have the Ashton Hayes & Co. Consulting, which started as just me, but one of the amazing things about it is it's grown and I've been able to work with a bunch of other social workers and support them in their own private practices. And so I do a lot of supervision, mentoring, leadership, both individually and there are some local agencies. I'm in regional New South Wales at the moment, but shortly moving to Melbourne, where I work with agencies in the area to do group reflective practice. But we do a lot of our work online, so our supervisors are across Australia and they're able to connect with people pretty much in every state. And then the other side is Willow Tree, which is my counselling clinic. And in that space, I started off with children and young people, and as it progressed, I sort of started working with more with adults. And I really love EMDR, so working in that trauma space is really important to me. I really love internal family systems and parts work. And
can I ask, so a lot of people, when they hear us talk, they kind of think, okay, well, but how do you do this? So how did you choose a modality or like how did you get started in the therapy bit? So leadership was sort of a bit of a known entity and a known structure.
Sure.
How did you move from that into direct practice counseling roles? Because I think it's so many jobs want you to have experience, but you need the experience to get the experience, and you can't get the AMHSW without working in a counseling role, but you can't work in a counseling role without some experience. So there's this back and forth. How did you?
And I think one of the important things is if you're doing a Bachelor of Social Work, be open to experiencing lots of different roles. Don't feel pressure to find a counselling role straight away, because the more experience that you have, the more you're able to bring to a therapeutic space. In therapy, it's about building relationship and understanding the multiple nuances that exist in a person's life. And so for me, I think I had been supporting my teams to be trauma-informed and therapeutic in their work. And alongside of that, doing that training and understanding around how being therapeutic and trauma-informed looked. And so when I decided to go into the therapy space, it's funny how we make connections throughout our career. So a few years before, when I had been running an intensive family support service, we'd had an in-service from a provider, a local provider, and I had just loved their the way that they worked and the work that they were doing, which was working with survivors of sexual assault. And so I looked for a job with them, because years later I had thought I knew they were doing therapeutic intervention. And when a role came up, they took a chance on someone who hadn't had direct experience delivering therapeutic intervention. But my experience in child protection, my experience in working relationally with teams, my experience in running therapeutic teams and being trauma-informed was a big part of why I was hired. They were open to that. And then I just grabbed every possible training opportunity I could. I worked with an internal and external supervisor. So very early on, I went straight into external supervision because I was able to get something out of that. It was a little bit different and added to what I was doing, the internal work. So that's really how I did it. But I grabbed training courses. So not so much doing big masters or whole other degrees, but starting with small introductory courses and then engaging in the more deeper versions of those. So introduction to ACT, for example, and then I went in a little bit deeper in introduction to DBT and then a little bit deeper. But ultimately, I knew that I wanted to work in the trauma space. And so EMDR was the next best step for me. But I had been in practice for 3 years before I did my first level one EMDR.
And now you've brought all of that in kind of together, but still separate. So Willow Tree, that's the Willow Tree side.
Yeah.
What about the Ashton Hayes and Co. or Ashton Hayes Consulting?
Mm-hmm.
That's a unique offering.
It is. So when I was doing my mental health accreditation, I really struggled to find targeted support in terms of both supervision and support with navigating the application.
I didn't find any and at the time.
Yeah, well, neither did I.
There was not struggled. There was nothing.
And so it certainly during pandemic, as we started to go into lockdown, more and more of my supervisees was asking me to support them with mental health accreditation with a view to being able to work from home as therapists, but as Medicare providers. And so I redid the entire application. I did not submit it, of course, but I redid the entire application so that I would be informed as to how to support people. And that started with a little Facebook group with 40 people in it, most people that I knew from either peer groups or other Facebook groups. We now have just under 4,000 people in that Facebook group, which are students as well as social workers from right across the spectrum of their careers.
We'll put a link to that in the show notes so people can
join. And I did that because, like I said, I couldn't find anyone to help me. I really struggled. There were a lot of chocolate incidents where I was eating way too many chocolates, and there were a lot of incidents of me feeling like, how am I ever going to achieve this? And I just didn't want other people to experience that. So the consulting side kind of came out of that. And then I can't remember, it's sort of a combination of both me feeling like I was answering the same question over and over again and people saying, God, I wish there was just a guide. And so I wrote the AMHSW roadmap, which has now been updated several times. But the purpose of that is to, so that people have everything there in one downloadable document. And we offer targeted supervision, supervision groups and that kind of thing. But I think one of the really positive things that's evolved is that I've been able to meet people who share my passion and who now work with me. And we come together as a team on a regular basis to make sure we're supporting people as best we can. We have a combination of AMHSWs and accredited social workers who share a similar vision. And seeing people go from, you know, their first consult with me saying, hi, oh, I just don't know how I'm going to get there, or I'm not going to be able to do it, to having their own practice is just an absolute gift. It's one of my favorite things to come out of it.
And there's a lot of myths about the, not myths, maybe around, there's difficulties in people figuring out what qualifications match that AMHSW application. So stay tuned, because we'll do an episode on FAQs and myths. But there's an interesting journey there from wanting to study law, legal aid, to criminology, to now having sort of two businesses working, the therapy side and a consulting, training, supervision side.
Yeah.
And creating resources and learning about web stuff and user experience and podcasting.
Yes.
You didn't mention your podcast.
I didn't mention the podcast.
Which you have not had me on as a guest until this collaboration. So naughty, naughty, I've had you on mine.
Yes, I need to be better at that.
Yes, I asked you on this February 20, 2020.
As we learned yesterday, I should have reciprocated.
Unsolicited DM on LinkedIn.
I think a lot of my contacts have been unsolicited DMs on LinkedIn, and I love that. I love how that evolves. But the podcast started as a way of supporting newly accredited social workers to share their experience so that we were sharing that experience with everybody, you know.
What's it called so people can find it?
It is called Becoming an AMHSW,
Fantastic.
The podcast. The branding is all around the roadmap or Becoming an AMHSW because it's easy to keep things, you know, with one name. But yes, I'm thrilled that we're doing this collaboration, and we do have a series coming up about now you're an AMHSW with people like yourself who are experienced and have these great thriving careers. Just to show people what they can possibly do.
Fantastic. So now that you said, we're trying not to say the word fantastic too many times.
I've
said it so many times. Maybe we should turn it into a drinking game. So if you've counted how many times we have said fantastic, or I have said fantastic, and I don't normally say it until you said, I say it too much.
Oops,
and now I've
said
it so many times. So fantastic. No. So our next episode is going to be around maybe some of the things that we've learned, maybe reflecting on what our younger selves didn't know or are surprised that we know now. So check that out. That'll be out following this episode. And if you missed the previous one around our social work journey so far, have a look at that too.
Please do.
Are you feeling stuck in your social work career, wondering if you're even on the right path? You're not alone, and that's why I created the Career Clarity Challenge. In just 5 days, you'll reflect on your values, discover your strengths, create a simple action plan, and learn how to use supervision as a real tool for growth. By the end of this challenge, you'll feel clearer about what matters, more confident in your strengths, and ready to take your next step. Sign up today. It's free, it's practical, and it could be the reset you've been waiting for. Just head to the show notes to join the Career Clarity Challenge now.